You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Cellar Show here at the Comedy Cellar on Sirius XM Channel 99. I'm here, as always, with Mr. Dan Natterman. Hello, Daniel.
How do you do, sir?
What's up with you?
Well, first of all, as you know, the night of this recording, it is the Yom Kippur. The fast is just ending right about now, and I'm going to have a sip of water to break the fast.
You fast?
I fasted, not entirely. I started late. I started about 10 p.m. You're supposed to start at like 7 or 6 p.m. last night.
But you don't believe in God.
That is correct. But what I do believe in is the need to suffer. And for some reason, I think it's
nothing more Jewish than that.
I think it's a good exercise in self-discipline and just a sort of a good exercise in reminding us that not everybody has food and what hunger is and what it feels like a little bit. And I think it's a good lesson. So I do it every year.
I think about every day. I think you're just trying to, like, one day a year think about it so you don't have to think about it the rest of the year. But I think if there's a God, he's getting a good chuckle out of you, Dan. All right. Also, we have, can you imagine, like, God, like, he knows that Dan doesn't believe in him, yet Dan is doing the stuff that he asks of him.
I mean, we don't hate to question.
It's the only thing that I do of a religious nature. Because I do think it's a good exercise, even beyond the religion,
and also if you think it's bullshit.
I do feel guilty. It's just weird how things get inculcated in you.
Actually, I want to tell you something about that.
And even though you don't believe it, you do it anyway. But
Jeff Leach, did they give me a bio on Jeff Leach? No. Well, Jeff Leach, one of our
yes, he has a bio right here, hailing from the UK.
Oh, I see. Hailing from the UK, Jeff Leach is an international comedian and film actor. He was a regular on BBC Comedy, and he's the host of the podcast Savage Snowflake. He produces and hosts The End of the World Show and Stand Up Synonymous. And our producer Periel Aschenbrand.
It's just like never going to get it
say,
right.
Say it exactly right.
He knows how to say it.
Have you ever considered pre-recording the intro?
Is it Aschenbrand?
Yeah,
it's Aschenbrand. That doesn't sound like the way it was said in the old country to me. All right, anyway.
Aschenbrand.
That's what I said.
And Dorman was probably Dvarman.
Dvarman, yeah. Anyway, and finally, Hari Zayed. Did I say it right?
Ziad.
Hari Ziad. Rashida Tlaib is spelled T-L-A-I-B, and everybody calls it Talib, but I'm sure it's Tlaib. And I'm so sensitive.
I mean, you can't even get my name right.
And then I read this wrong. Here.
I'm here every day.
Hari Ziad is a screenwriter and the author of Black Boy Out of Time, set to be published in 2021. They are also the editor-in-chief of Race Bader and the managing editor of Black Youth Project. Welcome.
Thank you.
I invited you on because you wrote an article that said that tipping is racist.
More or less.
Yeah.
And, you mean tipping as in tipping at a restaurant?
Yeah, tipping at a restaurant is racist.
Could you keep your voices down? Because the wait staff here look very angry right now.
And I was fascinated by this article. And, you know, of course, we have a restaurant here and people are tipped. And I don't think that makes us racist. But it's an interesting article. So do you want to tell the people a little bit about that? Why is tipping racist?
Yeah.
Talk a little closer in the mic if you don't mind. Or maybe I'll just turn off your mic. Go ahead, talk. I'll turn you off.
Getting it. More so saying that the institution of tipping as a labor practice influences how wait staff interact with black customers. There are studies on this that show that they're linked to racism. I don't think the actual process of giving someone money, if they do a good job, is in and of itself racist. So I was just arguing about, in that piece, how, especially for me, as I grew up not having the means really to go out and eat out, learning tipping culture, and then kind of getting forced into that as I came to New York, and seeing how that plays out and trying to overcompensate a lot of times is what happens when black folks, especially when they first get into the middle class, they do that. And the toll that that takes on you as a black person of like always feeling you have to overcompensate for something that you didn't have any hand in. And in this piece, I talk about a specific instance, which is just one instance, but I've had this a lot with wait staff who might assume that if you're a black person, you don't tip a certain way, and how that bleeds into these interactions as well. So it's not necessarily that giving money to a waiter or being nice to your waiter is racist, but the entire institution of tipping, and this is actually a historical fact as well, goes back to racism. It was actually a way initially to not have to pay black waitstaff as much, because tips were how most people got their money. So just historically, though, that's
what it was. What did they historically do? Did they not tip waitstaff of color, and they would tip waitstaff who were white? That was historically what happened.
Yes.
Was it?
Yeah.
In where? This is in New York.
I think this is just like the beginnings of the labor practice of tipping.
Okay, now can I ask you, without appearing to be too challenging, where did you determine that fact? Because it seems to me that tipping as an institution, maybe not for waitresses, but tipping in general, is a worldwide thing. Where is it that, where did you learn that? And we're not the only country even that tips waiters.
Right.
Countries, single race countries, some of them have traditions of tipping as well.
Yeah.
So where did you learn? Where did you
so
learn?
So in establishing, so you know that in a lot of places, you don't have to pay wait staff minimum wage because it is assumed that that will be offset by tips. And so the fact that you can pay service industry folks with tips is a process that came about through racism.
Okay, just so you wrote about this minimum wage, and I took issue with it because we do have to pay them minimum wage. It's a lower minimum wage,
mm-hmm.
and the reason is because they make like three times more than the minimum wage in tips. So I don't even know why, to be frank, I don't know why we have to pay them anything. Like the waitresses on average are the highest earning people that work here.
In this venue?
Yeah, in most places. I don't know about every place,
yeah,
but waiting tables is a pretty good job.
Especially
generally.
In New York, it can be
especially
really...
York, yeah. So, and if you believe in the concept of a minimum wage, if you believe that everybody should make $15 an hour, $15 mm-hmm. an hour, then if you know the waitresses, and don't forget, most of the tips now are in credit cards, so you know exactly what they're making. Or even if you were just going to do it just by credit cards,
right,
so you
don't
have to take any cash, make any assumptions. If you know the waitress made $100 in a five-hour shift on her credit card tips, why should you have to pay her an extra $10 an hour?
In tips?
Yeah, well, in other words, if she's making above the minimum wage just in tips, why should the employer then be required to pay her? Why can't the employer just be required to pay her the difference between what she earned in tips and the minimum
wage?
Well,
the point is that it shouldn't be based on someone's discretion. So if you want to pay wait staff well, which I think we all should, and you're saying that you do, and that's great.
No, I don't. I pay them the minimum wage. But they make, you know, over $1,000 a week.
You don't want to pay them well.
No, I'm saying they make very good money.
Right, right. And
tables.
So if we want to keep that the same, and we don't want that to change based on factors like someone's race or someone's gender, then it should be a standard pay, like
so
it is
you,
in every other.
But what he's saying is it's a bad system. It should be like in Europe, where wait staff gets paid a decent salary and customers don't tip.
Okay, but here, Danny Meyer's restaurants.
Which, by the way, is not factually correct. We still tip in Europe. We tip on top.
Yeah.
A little bit less, 10-15% generally. But, I mean, we still tip even though a lot of those tips, I'll actually ask in a restaurant, does this go to the wait staff or does this go to the venue?
But you don't have many black waiters there.
In Europe?
Yeah.
Oh, in London, yeah, you do.
Oh, you
know, but I was making
a joke about it being racist.
Yeah. In Sweden, yeah, you'd be hard pushed to find. You know.
So Danny Meyer's restaurants, he eliminated tipping, and he lost huge number of his staff. He's having trouble there. I've read a few articles about it. They're having trouble holding on to waiters and waitresses because they make way more money.
I was going to say, if you presented the option,
well,
to
then,
waitstaff.
he could augment their salary, and he would also have to raise the price of the dishes. I mean, the customer.
Yeah, but he can't. He could, but.
And there have been.
I'm just saying, it's really exposing how tipping is not oppressive to the staff, that they do well by the tipping.
Well, yeah. I mean, and again, this is situation by situation. There have also been many restaurants, and I don't study this. I'm not an academic that does this, but there have been other restaurants that have gone through this process, and that has been actually led by the wait staff who've created this because they want standard tips for the entire staff. So I think it depends, and like you said, you have to augment it properly. Ultimately, it should be about equal, but what we don't want, or what I don't want, and what I was arguing in this piece, is for it to be up to the customer's discretion who gets paid what.
You're saying because that would result potentially in African-American waitstaff getting less from customers.
No, he's worried about the African-American customers being treated bad by the waiters.
No, I mean, in the piece I'm talking about that, but I'm also talking about the staff. I mean, ultimately, I tie it back to it being a labor issue, and that is what happens. There have been studies that show that.
That black waiters and waitresses get tipped less?
Yeah. And this isn't, a lot of staff will share their tips, so it doesn't always affect it the same way, but that has been shown in studies.
I can believe it because I think that, like, women that you're sexually attracted to, you're probably going to give a bigger tip to.
Right.
And if you're into white women, then that's an advantage for them.
Example, yeah.
So I can believe that
that's
there are differences.
That's why I exclusively eat at Caribbean restaurants, Dan.
Now, Jeff Leach, of course, you prefer black women.
I don't prefer any type of woman. I prefer beautiful, intelligent, talented, created women.
With dark skin.
So, Noam, we have a penchant, should we say. But I don't think, I don't exclusively only date women of color. I've dated lots of white girls as well. Much to my misery.
But do you find yourself tipping at restaurants based on attraction?
I tip solely based on the service that I'm given. But I generally feel that, and this is... maybe this is another racial element into it, but as a white European, I've always been taught, especially when I came to America, that you have to tip 20%. You tip everyone 20% unless someone does a bad job. I could go into any of the diners up and down, you know, one of the main streets here where people are like, hey, there's your eggs, enjoy your fucking hash browns. And I'd still give that guy 20% because he probably lives on those tips that he receives.
She.
Well, is it 20% white, now? Black, I mean, it was 15% Asian. When I was a kid. Now it's sort of 18%.
It's 20%, right? Dan.
Huh? It's 20%? Since when?
The Goyim switched to 20% years ago.
Usually when they give you a check, they give you three suggested tips.
Yes.
And it starts at 18%. And then I think they give you 20, whatever they give you. But 15% is not even listed.
This is a classic psychological framing effect. They give you three numbers. The taxis do it.
They say, how well are you 25, doing?
25, 30, or 35%. Yeah. And you pick one of them.
Even though you can also pick your own.
Right. But the point is that they put it in your head and you feel like a jackass if you don't.
And the automated options are often those high percentages.
That's what I'm saying,
where if you
want
to put your own in, you have to actually type it in.
So it sounds like you all are also saying that it would be easier if it was just a standard, right?
I mean, not necessarily easier. I think you'd be hard-pressed to push that through with the staff themselves. If you went to, I'm not sure which studies you've read to show those facts and figures about, you know, people of color in wait staff being paid less. So it'd be interesting to read those. But I think if you did another round of studies amongst restaurants and businesses with wait staff and asked them, would they want to standardize or would they rather take what comes on the night? You'd find most of them would say, we'd rather just keep how it's coming in right now, in right now, I think. I don't know.
Will they be under less pressure to smile and you know?
Absolutely, yes.
It's astounding how much more money some waiters and waitresses make than others.
What do you attribute that to?
They do a way better job.
Yeah, ability. Surely it's about ability and enjoyment.
Including, by the way, I mean, this is New York, so including Linda, who's a black waitress who worked here for a long time. She makes one of the highest amounts in tips. But I guess. You know, you wouldn't compare
planet,
New York City comedy clubs' racial attitudes to like what you might find in a roadside diner.
I think it's personality more than how good a job you're doing. I mean, how good a job can you do? Here's the food.
I mean, you can do. I waited tables for years. You can do an amazing job or a terrible job.
But I think that the potential difference is far greater in personality than in how good a job you do. I mean, you can really have a good personality.
Okay, so let me tell you.
But how great, you can't do such a great job. They're going, oh my God, this waitress did. Nobody's
ever. You can do a terrible job.
You can do a terrible job.
So have you ever been to a Benihana? Have you seen what they do?
Well, that's a performance. That's a whole different thing.
Well, I mean, but that's, come on, that deserves a little extra, right? That's a 35%.
Yeah, but that's not, that's a very rare thing. Okay. Most restaurants don't have that.
Also, I've seen very unattractive waitresses
subjectively to you,
subjectively to me.
I'm covering you.
And, you know,
with non-symmetrical features and a non-golden mean ratio of hip to bust.
Extremely overweight. You know, mm-hmm. just not. You know,
they've done studies.
Or a guy who was in his 60s. You know, a dude in his 60s who was not attractive, and they were consistently the highest earning servers. So I'm very skeptical that that the non-meritorious factors are nearly as impactful as you might think. Yeah, of course, a dude's gonna tip a hot waitress just because, you know, he tips a hot waitress.
Yeah.
But as it evens out over the course of a year, I think that the people who do a really good job make better money always, no matter what
they
look like.
The great thing is that there are actual people who've studied it, so we don't have to make that conjecture.
He's calling your bullshit.
There's nobody studied this.
I can actually afterwards.
There's a study for everything.
Who operated those studies, and have they taken a cross section of all?
More
than
50% of studies
and say that.
More than 50% of more than 50% of peer reviewed studies, not just anybody's chose. 50% of peer-reviewed studies cannot be replicated.
I can test that fact. Where'd you get that from?
Yeah. It's food for thought. But Noam, as an owner, would it be better or worse for you, or neither, to move to a non-tipping system?
Well, if everybody moved to a non-tipping system together, then everybody would have to just increase the price of their dishes by 20%. Just raise every price by 20% and give it to the waitress, and then I wouldn't care.
Do you think psychologically, if a customer saw a higher price of a dish, even knowing he didn't have to tip, that would affect? That would affect him
In the short run, but then they get used to it because, you know, in the end they wouldn't be paying any more than they did the day before. So, I think it's easy enough. I don't think it'd be better for business, and I don't think it'd be better for people going to work going to eat in businesses.
Isn't the tipping system, for service industry, a little bit like any other industry? You get paid a higher wage the better you get that job, the more effort you put into it. It's just a more readily available sign that you're doing a great job. I know that when someone does great service, they get a big tip.
Well,
it feels good. If you work harder,
usually
you
it's your
material,
boss.
You
usually
club,
it's your boss that makes that decision. You know, you don't tip an airline pilot, but if the airline thinks they're doing a good job, they'll promote them.
There you go.
It's not the customer that generally decides your salary.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, but there are.
So it is at the very least an unusual system.
There aren't that many professions like waitressing. I don't know. This is the thing. I know. I guess it's racist. I mean, I don't actually believe it's racist. But leaving that just to the side, if it's not broken, don't fix it. This is a system which all over the world, for some reason, people stick to a system of tipping. You know. And I think it's going to be stay with. I think there's some wisdom in it that is not apparent to us, but must be there because it's lingered on for so long that it hasn't been disposed of anywhere, as far as I know.
I'll tell you what I think would be a fact. If you eradicated tipping altogether, you would see a massive decrease in the ability of waitstaff. People would just not try as hard because.
But
know
then
they
your
don't
boss could say, "Hey, we're getting complaints about you. You're fired."
Okay,
it's the same. System that the comics. Can I just say the comics? We don't get tipped by the audience, but if we're not killing, then SD will stop using us.
The
boss is making that decision instead of the customer.
No.
What do you mean, no? You're not going to not stop using us if we don't kill?
There's a much better analogy for tipping, which is salesmen. Salesmen make commission.
Right.
And that goes way beyond wages. I mean, that's everywhere. And tipping, in essence, is commission for sales. And waitresses who give good service and are available more and able to get more reorders and there when people want extra drinks and all that stuff. And I'm putting it that way because a lot of businesses encourage the waiters to go out and try to drum up business. But the truth is, we don't do that here, and it's not even necessary. The biggest factor in checks being lower is that you can't get the fucking waitress when you want her. We've all been through this. You know, you finish your drink and you don't see her for another 20 minutes.
Sure.
And by not coming back to the table when she should, she's making less money. Her commission on sales goes down. And if you eliminate tipping, it's the same as a car dealership in a certain way eliminating commission on sales for the cars or anything. It's gonna be a mess.
I mean, I think I think those are different in that salesmen are selling specialized things you don't necessarily always need. When you're going out to eat, you're coming for
every
one specific thing.
Every salesman makes commission.
Yeah, yeah, but
also,
wouldn't
say... Also, sorry, but coming to a restaurant is a speciality that you don't necessarily need.
Well, but the women aren't selling the food. They're coming to buy the food, and you just happen to be... that. You're like... The analogy might be the cashier. They're coming to buy the food,
well, the
and you're there
didn't make
to
the
take
car.
The order.
The car,
no, but he's selling the car. The waitress
they're
is not
selling the food. Try the specials. You got
exactly the same thing. Then
to an extent, they're selling the food, but usually you come in and you order, and they happen and they happen to be there to take your order and to deliver the food. But they're not coming to your table and saying,
"Are you going to the car?
Are you tired of paying high prices for a cheeseburger? I've got a deal for you. This cheeseburger, this handy dandy cheeseburger.
That's one kind of salesman." Every salesman, even high end, even good corporate thing where they're selling books to libraries or something. They're paid on commission because everybody knows if you're not paid on commission, why would you what's your incentive to sell?
Sure.
I mean, but these are
I don't see wages as a salespeople, but there is a component, but I think a small one. But in any case,
what's a waitress's motivation besides the honor of her job to get to that table every second she can be there? So she could take orders.
That's not a sales job.
Yes, I'm saying it's directly related to her orders. She knows the more she sells, the more she goes home with.
Yeah.
And if you take that, remove that from the equation, she'll check her text messages.
But the thing is, there should be an objective person who's determining that. Like you said, there are bosses, there are systems. You can look at the end of the night, say, these are the tables. You can even, if you want, give feedback. Implement a system where you can get feedback for a waitress job.
Well, here's what you liberals have done to us. Even in a semi-imperfect world, that might be plausible. But the fact is, you can't fire anybody for anything anymore. You think I'm going to go up to can I speak like really like outrageously? Like, you think I'm going to go up to a waiter who identifies as they and fire them? And because the customers complained they couldn't get service, I'm going to be so scared. I'm so scared to fire anybody because of the immediate accusation that I was firing them not for the reason that I say, which is always the reason, but because of some thing that they decided that was some bigotry or some improper motive that they're going to attribute to me.
You're fully with it, not in New York, but in most places, fully within the law to fire people based on their sexual identification. So in most cases, that's not the case.
Right, but
Supreme Court case right now that they're hearing is they're probably going to make it completely legal to fire trans people. So.
Yeah, that would be terrible if they do that. I mean, I don't know what the Constitution actually says about it, but...
And gay people, not just trans people, both,
yeah, people
right?
get fired all the time. I've been fired.
If you want to go into that, so... Listen, I don't support, though. I think everybody knows, I don't support firing anybody because they're gay or they're trans, God forbid. But they're basing this on a law, and the law only says about you can't fire a woman or you can't fire somebody because of their sex. And that's what that's the law they passed. And now they're trying to say that the law goes beyond that. And that's probably not a strong legal argument. I haven't really looked into it, but that's not a strong constitutional argument. The legislature is supposed to make the laws. That's our system. And they are perfectly able to pass a law saying it's illegal to fire anybody based on sexual orientation or social gender or how they identify or whatever it is.
Is that going to apply to hiring as well? That you can't be hired purely based upon your gender,
yeah,
sexuality?
Yeah, I mean, I think they really should pass that kind of law. And look, if the Supreme Court reads it into the law, you know, I'm not going to object to it because, you know, they're just going to pocket I'm happy with the outcome, so I'm, you know, what are you going to do? But if you held a gun to my head and you wanted me to be perfectly logical about it, I'm like, well, I don't know. We have a legislature and we have a court system, and quite often we hate the court because they don't come out with the policy decision that we would like, but that's not what they decide.
Fortunately, within another year, this won't even matter because let's be real, right? Most waitstaff are out of work performers trying to become actors or comics or musicians, and then
in New York they are, not in every other part of the country.
Everywhere.
No, not in Indianapolis.
I'm just fucking around, Dan. Right, I mean, all right. It's all right. You can jump.
He can't help
himself. It's all right. And then now, based on all the emails I get, every role I go up for is normally met with a response of, "We've actually changed this now. We're only taking diverse bookings. So within another year, everyone who's a wait staff of color or female or trans or gay will be in Hollywood anyway.
Well, are you?
So there'll be only white straight men left in working.
Do you hear this white man? Do you hear this white privileged man? Not just
it's
privileged
over,
by white,
it's
but privileged
over.
By being handsome, complaining that he can't get work because he's
only,
white.
I'm only here to see if you actually have any wait staff jobs available because it's.
So this is interesting. So
Hollywood
what
did, has nothing what, for me.
When you hear a guy like that complaining about the fact that he's being discriminated against because he's white.
I mean, poking fun at a situation rather than complaining
no,
about it. But yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No. Let's be honest.
It's frustrating. I'm not complaining
about
it.
Let's
it's
be
frustrating.
Very honest.
Yeah.
I'll be very honest. So you're complaining about it, and frankly, I've heard this from many people.
Mm.
Many people.
The agencies will
I've
tell
heard
you
it
directly
from,
now. Though.
I've heard it from camera people. I've heard it from stagehands. I've heard it from writers. I've heard it from many, many people.
Yeah, it's an industry-wide.
Yeah.
So. Push, you know.
So I'm presuming that you're on the other side of that political debate. What would you say to him to make him understand why he shouldn't be bothered by that?
I mean, I don't care.
You don't care.
but I mean, there's
still... You want people to care about your situation, right?
I don't care if you care about it, but it's still...
See, that's problematic for me.
I mean,
I'm also, by the way, a left... politically leaning, yeah. Democratic, liberal.
Okay. No,
and
but
it's
no,
really,
but,
no. Really, no, no, but it's really problematic for me to hear that. Whether we're joking, I'm jesting, obviously, about with what I'm saying. But it is frustrating.
You're not jesting.
No, no.
Own it.
I'm jesting
Why
about.
Would you be
I'm jesting?
Jesting
about the idea that people of color and trans people are never going to be working in.
Oh no,
in,
but you're not jesting about
anymore.
The fact that
I'm not jesting about
you.
The fact that it frustrates me.
But how do you think everybody else
job?
Feels?
What's
I mean, everybody else has been feeling like that for their entire lives.
Relax, angry woman at the end of the table. Just let me finish my point, and I'll tell you.
Don't call me that.
One at a time.
You're being very defensive and angry.
One at a time.
I'm not angry at all.
Well, then let me finish my point and I'll explain. You won't even have to ask that question. I think it's wonderful to see the diversification of every industry. It would be great to see people of diverse nature getting a fair and equal chance at every job. And I think that has to apply to everyone who goes up for that job. At the moment, we're by no means in a situation where white straight men are dominating the performance space and the performance and
what?
Entertainment industry. We're not.
Okay.
We're
well,
not. No. And there's
that's,
studies
that's
to ba- prove it.
That's
people
not based on any,
far more.
No,
no, no. It is.
No,
it's based on what
fact.
The you know. It's based on the number of programs. Hang
money.
On. Let me.
You guys
make
are
my
getting
point.
Your studies from the same
listen
place.
Listen very calmly when you talk to me. It is shown it's, through it's, the number of shows that have been commissioned that have gone beyond pilot stage to being on TV. It's. Factually correct, there are more people of color or females in those protagonist roles than there are white straight men now. That is now
and
a
and how
fact.
Long has that
protagonist
been going on?
Means the hero.
Listen, I'm not saying, but hang on a sec. That's to suggest that, oh, it's all right if white dudes don't get any opportunities for
Nobody,
the next 30
no, I'm
years
not
because
saying
because
that.
Black people
he's
or women.
He's been talking.
You know?
Shut up, Jeff.
Let
a woman talk.
But
it's frustrating to hear someone who's campaigning for the equality of all people, which, by the way, is what I would like to see happen in the world. You don't have to look any further than my own home to understand that because my girlfriend is a woman of color who I respect and admire and want to see her get all the opportunities she deserves that she hasn't necessarily got in the past
and
because
who,
of her
And
skin
who
color.
Hired her?
The best man in the world.
I did. Go ahead.
But it's very frustrating to be pushing constantly for the equality of all people, all genders, all races, and then hear someone who professes to be for equality go, but I don't care about your situation. That's really frustrating because I do care about your situation and I care about everyone's situation. And it's a very frustrating time right
but
now.
You,
now, that doesn't
you,
mean, I'm not angry.
Okay, Jeff,
I'm just frustrated.
You've said your point. Go
but
ahead.
You yeah. can acknowledge that straight white men...
have dominated
in,
for decades.
Can I finish my sentence? Thank
yeah, you.
You can acknowledge that like for... I mean, since like the beginning of
Hollywood.
Straight white men have had all of the opportunities and made
well, the gay
all
men were
of
in the
money.
Closet.
Yeah, well, that okay, yeah. but still.
Yeah.
And so now it might be frustrating for you or somebody like you, but everybody else has been feeling like
Periel,
that
this is
for,
such a weak argument.
Why is it a weak argument?
Because it implies that people are not born innocent. It implies that Jeff is somehow, that there's
this
some...
This has nothing to do with Jeff,
let
though.
Me answer.
But it does. It absolutely does.
Let me answer. It implies that a white kid born in 1990 somehow.
Jeff was born.
I was going to say bless you, 84, but I'll take it. I'll take it. That's my stage age.
That a white kid is not born innocent. He's born with the obligations and the guilt of what.
Oh no! I have to suffer because other white people have been advantaged.
Rather than we're all human beings and it's wrong to discriminate against anybody, we're saying now no, it's not wrong to discriminate against anybody. It's now okay to discriminate against these people, because for a while we were discriminating against those people. So what? How does that ever end? That's exactly what you're saying.
No, it's not.
I mean,
hold on. I'm not getting up. That's exactly what you're saying. Because you're saying to him, that's not what I said. He's complaining. He says, you know what? People tell me they don't want to hire me because I'm white. And you say to him, well, yeah, because when Hollywood started, all the white guys are getting the job. So you shouldn't have a beef with that.
As opposed to explaining to him
why it's okay for people to tell you that they're not going to hire you. Why it's because we talked about this many times. Because at some point, listen, I'm sure I've said this before. We used to have a dream, a common national goal, which was Martin Luther King's dream, content of your character, and that was where we were all going. That is clearly not the dream anymore, and this new Harvard decision is a perfect example. The dream now is to count everybody up by their skin color, by their sex, by who they say they want to sleep with, by who, what gender. And then we have to then lay that into, plot that, and make sure that we have X number of each things. And that's not the content of your character at all. And that really bothers me. Not that I'm particularly impacted by it in my life, but I don't think... I mean, maybe this is I'm speaking out of turn, but I like to think that if I were black, I would not feel that I wanted that to happen to other people. I would like to think that if I were black, I would say to myself, they did this to me and my people for years. I don't want to do that to anybody else.
That me saying that that's not what I'm caring about is not me saying that I...
I wasn't referring to you.
Yeah. But... the point isn't that you have to suffer or whatever. And if it was, the suffering compared, like you said, to what has been happening, it's not even comparable. But the point is that there are still structures in place that allow folks, straight white men, to continue most of the money in Hollywood going to a certain group of people. There's no 2, 5, 10 years of casting a lead of color that's going to change that anytime soon. And so what I do care about is thinking about how do we shift that so that we could get to a place where that doesn't matter? But we're not anywhere near that.
Do you agree that the money in Hollywood goes to the people who put people in the seats? I mean, Eddie Murphy years ago was making $20 million a picture at a time of very little diversity because any Eddie Murphy movie was going to sell out at the box office. Who gets paid in show business or on the TV news or anything beyond... The audience they attract,
but who gets the chance to get that stage in the first place?
Well, I mean, for a long time it was stacked, but I think it's still
stacked.
I mean, I work in
TV too, so I
don't know. Maybe it's just my wife's viewing habits, but every day when I go home, there's yet another mini series on cable featuring people of color, and
it is.
Hold on, it is great. I hope you don't think I'm complaining about it. It's great. I love to see America becoming that. But I don't think we should ever then cross the line and to say that, yet it's okay to say that I'm not hiring a black cameraman this week. I'm not hiring a white cameraman. I need a black cameraman. Yeah, I know you have a great resume. I know you're a great cameraman, but I need a black cameraman. I have a very, very diverse staff and a very, very diverse roster of comedians. This week in Vegas, I think we have four black comedians and a Puerto Rican, four blacks and a Puerto Rican on the show or something like that, in one show in Vegas. But I will not hire somebody or not hire somebody based on their skin color. I'm just not going to do it.
Do
you think that you're unique in that? It is incredibly diverse, but I don't think all places are like that. And you hear people saying all the time that comedy is filled with a lot of straight white guys, and it's been harder for other people to get ahead.
Back when my father was alive, the black comics were dominating. Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor.
But you're talking on like a super, like that's like the highest level.
In the club still, Greer Barnes. I mean, it was. No, there was Def Jam comedy.
Also, people like to equate what has been seen previously on television as what is the extent of what comedy is. There are so many black comedy rooms exclusively booking black comics all over the fucking world. And that's great. Create your own shit. Create your own market. And if there's an audience who wants to watch only black comedy, create that. Right now, I don't get angry when I see a show. My friend Gina Yashere has got a show right now
that's blowing up.
Huge. She's Bob Loves Abishola. It's an African-derived story. And she's
but
doing
it's
great.
The first Nigerian
can I just say something?
Character on TV, okay. Right?
Well, so I'm not angry about...
Wait, Jeff, one second. Because you guys are mixing stuff, and the viewer might, the listeners might get confused. Talking about stand-up comedy in the clubs is one thing. Now, I'm not talking about getting leading man roles in TV shows and movies. That has been difficult for black people to break through and may continue to be. I'm no expert.
Not
on
for
it.
The last 2 years.
But I'm just saying, in comedy, was a very early, Flip Wilson, Bill Cosby. These guys, these black comedians, had TV shows in the '60s. So for whatever reason, stand-up comedy was one of the easier and quickest adopters of non-racist or diversity, whatever it is. But other things,
well,
no.
Because we used to be an art and a craft that used to give a voice to everyone.
Now, what about the fact that do studios have the right to say to themselves, we think a white guy is going to bring in more box office? We've done the numbers. We've done the market research.
They should bring in the best actor and the person who can sell. And if they want to bring in someone who sells tickets.
No, they don't need to bring in the best actor. They need to bring in the person who sells tickets.
So is it racist? Is it racist to say,
of course,
I'm producing the next James Bond and I've done some market research and I've learned from my market research that the public wants a white James Bond. Am I racist then for saying we're not going to consider a black James Bond?
No, the public's racist.
Right, but we saw what happened
racist.
With...
James Bond is white.
We saw what happened with Black Panther and films like this that we thought would never have as big of audience as they
would.
I agree with you that studios need to reconsider their position that black and Asian leading men won't fill seats, but is it racist for them to try to maximize their profits by factoring that in, you know?
It's capitalism.
Capitalism. It's not racism.
But I think in that same way, it's also capitalism to, now that you see that there is a pining for these type of shows, it's coming back the other way. And so
I think studio has maybe the least racist people out there. They just want money.
No.
I think a lot of these studios are virtue signaling, and they don't even commission. This is what upsets me more than anything. Can I get this one point out? Because it's really, there's so many wonderfully talented black comedians, black actors, a number of which I either know or I'm friends with or I'm aware of because I've seen them perform. And they don't get opportunities because these studios are not booking the best talent. They're not booking the best black actor. They're booking as someone who's been on 12 other shows and it's easy for them. So they're not booking based on talent
Right, but they're also not booking because they're full of hatred. They're doing what they think is going to make them the most money.
Hold on.
And they may be wrong.
They want to sit in the shareholders meeting and go, look at us, aren't we great? We booked a few black shows in and we got that person.
Jeff,
you know that.
Hold on.
It's bullshit. So virtue signaling, not real.
You're going to finish?
Yeah, I'm just very frustrated.
He trails off. But
had a coffee.
It's kind of like a car with bad gas. You turn it off and... racism is a word that's bandied about very bluntly, and it's not a very precise meaning. I do think the following is true. That, for instance, Seinfeld, the studio executives, probably Jews, many of them, didn't think that such a Jewy show could have mass appeal. So they were very cautious about it. And you see this happening over and over again. And they underestimate middle America's lack of concern for who's entertaining them as long as they're entertained. Now, I don't think that's because... That's not anti-Semitism. But it amounts to a barrier, or did amount to a barrier to Jews, because they were miscalculating based on race. It does not indicate any, and I think I think we really are on the tail end of learning these lessons as a society.
Right. I mean, when I'm talking about racism, I'm not talking about an individual person's animus. I'm talking about, like you said, the effect and the barriers that come up. And so if we're going to change racism, and again, what I'm talking about system-wide, then you have to change the way that the systems work. So it's not about whether or not someone has any personal animus, but we have to change the way things work if we want to strip down these barriers.
I'd be interested to know how you think the system of entertainment and booking for TV and film, for instance, should work. What you think would be a more fair and equal way to approach that process of...
I mean, I think I agree with what you said about this. It's not about having the best talent. There has to be some other way of incentivizing other than just what kind of market research we have right now, what we think will get the most eyes on a show, because it doesn't incentivize the best talent, and it either leans lopsided one way or the other.
The best talent,
I
know
TV
you guys think it's very important that it be the best talent, and I'm not underestimating the value of having the best talent, but for instance, Star Wars didn't have the best talent. A producer makes various calculations. A Brad Pitt may bring a certain amount to the gross of the movie. An unknown of greater talent than Brad Pitt, he might think, well, this guy is so compelling that once they see this, this will actually be even a stronger movie, and it will...
And he's cheaper to hire.
And cheaper to hire, whatever it is. But you can't have an inferior talent, because no matter how famous they are, as we've seen, a movie can totally flop if it's crappy. So the movie has to be good, and it has to also fill the seats, and it has to be commercial, and it's very unfair and brutal, because that's why we have all these superhero movies now, right? Mm. Because everything else is a crapshoot, and people lose a lot of money that way.
But we now live in an age where even if the movie is good, beautifully shot, well cast, well performed, it can still be turned into something, some kind of a protest piece, like the Joker movie is apparently about white incels.
I haven't seen the Joker.
It's a war cry for white incels.
As a former white incel, it's not funny.
Hurry. So we got a little more time.
But no, I'm getting laid these days. But there was a time when...
when you were very angry with me.
When I was extremely hostile in my thoughts. It never manifested itself in action. But there was some fantasies that, you know, that were not
I think they
peaceful.
Made a mistake casting Joaquin Phoenix instead of you. They should have done it.
Well,
what else is on your mind these days?
Well, Black Boy Out of Time. Can we get to his new book? Hari's new book, Black Boy Out of Time. It's said to be published in 2021. Have you finished writing the book?
I'm still working on it.
Okay, because that's why it's said to be published in 2020. But yeah. You have a deal.
I do.
Well, what is this book, Black Boy Out of Time?
It's a memoir. I'm talking mostly about where I was raised, how I grew up. My name is Hari because my mother is Hindu. She converted when she was younger. She's black. My dad's Muslim. And it's just about how I experienced race, gender, and sexuality, basically.
Where'd you grow up?
Cleveland. And, yep.
Your father's Muslim?
10 years ago. My dad's Muslim.
Is he like a woke guy in terms of sexual stuff, or is that a friction with you? Part of your memoir?
Yeah, it's part of the lot of, there was friction between both my parents. I mean, we're on pretty good terms now. But it didn't really come from his religion. Both of them are converts, and they're both converted from Christianity, so a lot of their thoughts around that.
Are you religious yourself?
No, not really. I still do certain holidays, things like that. But
now we know you identify as non-binary, but we're making assumptions here on your sexuality.
No, I don't want to talk about his sexuality. We didn't invite him on that. It's none of our business. Really, I don't want to talk about that. Unless he wants to talk about it, I don't think. I want to talk about...
Let's just go with sexy.
What are you talking about in the... So let me get back to my other question. What issues... you write a lot about race. Mm-hmm. What are the other hot issues that are on your mind?
I write a lot about gender, sexuality, and how those things interact. I think that blackness is a huge function of my queerness and my gender. And so A lot of my work is around how we talk about those things in racialized terms and not necessarily chopping it all the way up. I think when most people hear intersectionality, they're thinking like you have this identity plus this identity. And so my work is about how those things interact.
Do you hear a lot of, so you travel in a lot of like intersectional, in the intersectional milieu, is that how you say it, Jeff? Like, you know, various organizations and meetings and read the blogs and stuff. Do you find a lot of anti-Jewish feeling in those places?
No. I'm a lot of folks who are in communities that I'm with are Jewish themselves.
Yeah, but you know that people, that doesn't...
Your personal experience.
I mean, not like my best friend is, but I'm saying, you asked if I experienced that.
No, I mean, because you see that every time a one of these protests, whether it's the Women's March or the Dyke March or Occupy Wall Street or whatever it is, anytime somebody wants to identify as being Jewish, it's a big controversy.
Yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I haven't experienced that. I mean, I know that there's this huge conversation about whether critiquing Israel is and anti-Semitism.
Well, careful.
but yeah, that's a conversation that comes up a lot. But
there's
definitely
racism within the LGBTQ community because there's now a Black Pride Parade in London,
right?
And my friends are telling me about, and I Black, you know, gay friends, and I was surprised. I thought the LGBTQ community was pretty open and pretty supportive of everyone, and they said, no, it's a huge amount of racism
people
within that.
People are people. Come on.
You did say that something about your queerness. Mm-hmm. I didn't bring it up. Noam, he did. Now, is queerness distinct from gayness?
So it's usually a matter of... queerness is more like a political identification. People who claim queer, they're usually talking about how they operate in the world and like what issues that they also identify with, more so than just their sexuality, at least historically. For me, queerness... like you said, gives me more room to also acknowledge that there is racism in a lot of LGBT spaces, and queerness is kind of a space outside of that where we can...
Is it linked to the sexuality? Because I used to DJ in the queer club scene back in London, and we were just club kids. We called ourselves queer club kids, but I was definitely only having sex with women.
Yeah, I mean, it can be. Queerness is more so about non-normative.
So have I found my in to Hollywood? This is it. I'm queer. I've done it.
By the way, what is wrong with, what is wrong with saying, if somebody thinks, somebody suspects you're being racist, what is wrong with saying, are you crazy? Oh, half my friends are Black. And say, oh, some of my best friends are Black. Like, that's become like a accepted cliche for a lame defense.
Because you can be friends with someone and still not like them. I mean, there are a lot of misogynists who have wives and girlfriends, and they hate that. They still have hatred.
They don't like them.
I never understood this because probably if you hate Black people, you don't spend a lot of time socially hanging out with Black people.
But again, I mean, if racism's not hatred necessarily, or back to our earlier point, an overt disgust with someone, it can manifest in different ways. And so you can be racist and still like to hang out with Black people because that gives you some joy. You like their culture or you like certain aspects of it, but that doesn't mean that you support them or you want to strip away the boundaries.
No, I may not support them. Hold on.
It's an evidentiary.
I don't have to support them to not be called a racist. They don't have to support Israel to say that. I mean, I don't have to support them. I just have to treat them as humans. I don't have to agree with their politics is that the definition of race? If I don't agree with your politics on race, that makes me a racist?
No, I didn't say that. But I don't think that support means that you agree with someone all the time. I think support is...
What if I oppose them? What if I have a bunch of Black friends and they're like really support the racial quotas? And I'm like, no, you guys are idiots. I can't stand that you feel that way. It makes me crazy when you guys talk that way. Now, oh, you're a racist. I mean, is that what we've come to? It's okay, then I'll keep my opinions to myself, like most people do, because they don't want to be called racist. But my only point is that I think that it's a natural thing if somebody's accusing you of having a particular feeling about Jews or Blacks or gays, And if you say, well, no, actually, you know, look at the way I live.
Right.
Look at who I socialize with. Look who I interact with. And they say, well, that's irrelevant.
That's not proof in and of itself.
It's pretty strong evidence. That should be. It's not ridiculous. I agree with them. It's not ridiculous to bring that up as a defense. It's not proof positive that you're not racist.
Well, there can be no. You're trying to prove a negative. Right. I'm not something.
If you accuse me of racism and I can provide evidence that I have many black friends, that's at a minimum.
What's better evidence than that?
That's a minimum a good defense, if not proof positive.
I mean, just to play devil's advocate, John Wayne Gacy was like a church-leading family man, and he had 17 dead bodies of children that he had buried under his house. So how you behave publicly doesn't necessarily mean what you do.
I mean, that's a sociopath, though. You're talking about
I'm giving an extreme example just to illustrate a point.
I'm talking about
how you
behave
privately. Someone who lives outside the realm of normal, you know, mindset and thoughts.
I think when that usually comes up, it's because people bring that up as the only proof.
What else can you say?
And it's after they've already been seen to be racist. And so Donald Trump bringing out one of his black cabinet members, is not going to be proof enough.
Yeah, they're not friends. Donald Trump doesn't
have a lot of black friends.
But even if you did, well, you've already seen how he's been racist in other ways, so you need more proof than that.
If someone has done something explicitly racist, yes, and then the fact that they might have black friends is not going to absolve them of their racist action, but it is a reasonable argument to make against the charge of racism.
I agree with Hari. There's definitely a lot of people who are incredibly racist against black people who would say that they have lots of black friends. Because if you've ever heard Jamaicans talk about Africans, then you know there's plenty of people shitting on other black people.
Black Jamaicans talking about black Africans?
Yeah, have you ever heard that?
Have you ever heard
talk about Chinese people?
I haven't.
There's a huge amount of racism within the race itself, you know?
You ever hear the old joke about I took my girlfriend to the Caribbean? Oh, Jamaica? No. She went on her own volition.
I mean, I have now.
Okay.
No, but seriously, I mean, some of the worst racism I hear comes from people of the same race towards people from a different denomination.
You internalize things.
Noam has no great love for the Hasidic community.
On Yom Kippur, no less.
I didn't say it. I mean, I don't. Not that I don't like the Hasidic community. I just won't pretend that they're, you know, that I would want to. That if my neighborhood became Hasidic, I wouldn't want that. And people would.
Why not?
Because I don't want to feel like an outsider in my own neighborhood. And I think that sentiment is often called racism, and it's not. I don't think it's racism when the black community doesn't want all the white people gentrifying Harlem.
Harvard?
Although there's nothing they can do about it, but I mean it's a free country. But I don't take that as them hating white people, that they want to feel that they live in the community they feel. And like I've said, like if you're Italian and you're gonna move to America, so you say, where am I gonna move to? Well, there's an Italian neighborhood here in Queens. Oh, great! I'm gonna go live in that Italian neighborhood. That's not racist at all, right? You want to go live in an Italian neighborhood if you're Italian. But then if the neighborhood starts turning Chinese, and you don't want it to turn Chinese, oh, you hate Chinese people. No, I don't hate Chinese people. I still want to live in the Italian neighborhood. That's why I chose this neighborhood. I have nothing against Chinese people.
You do it again, but in an Italian accent, so I can believe it.
and it's called racism. Everything's called racism. Even the very normal thoughts that all decent people have, you know, is called racism. And to the point where it loses its punch. And I think that's really a bad casualty of the overuse of the word. What's that?
Keith just walked in on point.
Speaking of someone who calls racism all the time, it was Keith Robinson.
Are you inviting him over to speak, or are you just...
Is there any way to stop him?
Well...
No. Don't even answer that.
Keith, is it racist for black people to want to keep Harlem black?
Is it racist to want to keep Harlem black? No, it's not racist because they want to keep it black because they want to stay in Harlem.
Right,
they want to get pushed out.
Well, is it racist to want to live, you know, in a neighborhood that you're familiar with the people, your own people that you're comfortable with? Is that racism? If your neighborhood,
what are you trying to set me up for now?
If a bunch of Hasids want to move into your neighborhood, are you cool with it?
A bunch of what?
Hasidic people.
You mean as in Jews?
Orthodox.
He doesn't see any difference between them. A Jew is a Jew to keep. Anyway, I think. Why do you agree, Hari?
I don't know what I'm agreeing with.
Do you agree that it's not hate for somebody to want to live in a neighborhood or be around people like themselves?
I don't think it's inherently, but it could be.
It could be. That's right. It could be.
Well, I mean, you know, I live in a very diverse neighborhood.
What does that mean?
Diverse means a lot of Indians there.
Oh, careful. Go ahead.
What?
But is it mostly Indian?
My wife is Indian. Go ahead.
Is it mostly?
She's only like 12% Indian.
Okay, so go ahead. My wife? No, she's 50%. Solid 50%.
Is that from India or Native American?
From India.
Go ahead. So what? How do you like
so,
that?
No, it's good.
It's good?
It's good to meet other people. Everybody should be forced to meet other people.
I agree with that,
so
too.
They don't, you know, have a narrow view of who people are. But the reason why a lot of folks are scared of black folks and Latin people is because they never lived around them. And they only get to see the bullshit that's on the news.
Sure. That's true.
How much do you tip usually?
How much do I tip? I over-tip. Just to prove that I'm not a bad tipper.
Harry was saying. That
he wrote an article about tipping being racist.
Well, I mean, I don't generally pick up coins for a similar reason.
When anybody's watching.
When people are watching.
Dan is a horrific tipper. I've seen him
tip. No, I'm quite a good tipper.
No, I see you tip beforehand.
Yes, but that doesn't mean I'm a bad tipper. I pre-tip.
You pre-tip is bad.
But I pre-tip very generously. But it's always a generous tip.
Not according to me. In other words, my
pre-tip is about 50% of the charge of the meal. I eat free here because I do the podcast. So
pre-tipping is bad.
Why is it bad?
Because you know what they used to.
Because if they do a bad job, I can punish them the next time I'm here because I'm here regularly.
No, but they used to in Philadelphia, the IHOP used to make all the black folks pay ahead of time.
Yeah, but I'm doing it voluntarily. I'm not being forced to.
Why'd they do that, Keith?
Huh?
Why did they do that?
Because they're racist.
All right.
Well, it's nice that we brought it back to tipping. Yeah. It was very deftly handled, Noam. Has anybody seen, I just very briefly, and we don't have to spend too much time, has anybody seen Gary Goleman's new special? I have not yet.
I saw it.
And it's called The Great Depression. It is about, Gary is one of course, our regular comedians. Are you familiar with his work, Gary? He's a regular comedian here at The Cellar, and he just came out with an HBO special called The Great Depression, where he discusses his battle, his ongoing battle, and his past battles with the beast that is depression.
Very serious clinical depression. It's excellent. I mean, I think that for anybody who has struggled with any sort of mental health or knows anybody who has, which is pretty much everyone.
Including our dear friend, Jeff Leach, which just proves that good looks cannot fend off depression.
Yeah, I talk about depression quite a lot on the podcast.
Well, then you must have seen Gary's new special.
No, I have no desire to see anything that Gary Goleman puts out. I think that the less...
Easy. No.
I'm not kicking off beef. I'm just saying the less that I say about Gary Goleman, probably the better. I like someone who sticks by their principles of what they present as their public persona and what they're like on a one-to-one basis. And I don't think those two things match up with that man. So
okay. You know what? I'm gonna defend him.
You can, yeah, absolutely.
To say the following, that I'm surprised that you, who have had your own battles with keeping the proper frame of mind,
absolutely,
don't give more latitude to someone else who may have reacted in a way that may or may not have been appropriate when they were having the issues that you understand.
Absolutely.
And you should just let it go.
Absolutely. I have let it go. I don't walk around, you know, I don't have a I don't like Gary Goleman banner that I tote around everywhere. But if people are going to ask me a question about him, then I'll be honest. I say you know what my issue is? I've made plenty of mistakes in my life because of my depression, because of mental illness, because of being a fucking idiot, in all honesty. And when I do something
that's
wrong...
That's what Gary said about you, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. And he'd be right. But what you do is you own up for it and you try not to make those same mistakes again. I think physically intimidating and threatening other people within your career and then passing yourself off as an oracle of advice for new comics, I think doesn't match up for me. That doesn't match up for me. I wish him great success, but it's not for me.
You know, Jeff.
You know?
It doesn't sound like you wish him great success.
No, I do. That sounds
kind of like the homeless guy telling me God bless you when I wouldn't give him
a dollar. Gary Goldman doesn't give a fuck what I think. He's got a new special out. He's in the Joker movie. He's doing just fine. He's okay. He's great. He's doing great.
It's none of my business, and I just... It bothers me that... I don't know. I don't want to air that dirty laundry, and I just feel like people should let things go sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Just move on.
Well, so. I had no idea that there was issues between you. I thought you would surely enjoy a special that deals with things that you've dealt with.
I probably would. I think he's a very talented comedian. I'm not questioning his ability. I'm just saying that it doesn't. I don't want to invest in a certain lane into something.
I would say that in a certain lane that he's in, nobody can touch him. He's that good.
But he can touch other people though.
All right.
Hey, I mean, it's
It's phenomenal. I know I have a lot of people very close to me who have committed suicide or have struggled like with really serious...
I'm not surprised by that. Yeah.
Can we state for the record, Harry did not support that statement. He was very against that joke.
I mean, it really is... It's really phenomenal.
All right. Yeah, it is good. I recommend everybody watch it. I saw it.
I went to the taping.
I had to leave. The last 7 minutes I haven't been through yet. Actually, I had to stop. I have to resume it.
Too depressing?
Tonight. No, it is really good. Yeah. And it's you know, I think comedians have been struggling with trying to find an original way to present their hours, as it were, mm-hmm. and he found a way. And that's an accomplishment in and of itself.
Well, it's like Hannah Gadsby. I mean, she...
Well, you know, I spoke favorably about Hannah Gadsby.
Yeah, you were
I gave
a big
a lot
fan
of
Hannah Gadsby's special as well, because she spoke of her issues with homophobia, and it wasn't necessarily funny all the time. It was interesting, and sometimes it was funny, but it also catapulted her to a level of fame far beyond that which most comics will ever achieve.
Just
being funny is not enough anymore.
You need to be thought-provoking.
You have to be either thought-provoking or... I don't know, but
just being white and funny is definitely not enough anymore.
No, you know, Sebastian Maniscalco managed to...
He's funny.
...become super famous, not because he's necessarily... I don't know if he's unique or... I'm not familiar. He's pretty unique.
He's really good.
I'm not familiar with his work. I just know that he's famous and he doesn't talk about depression.
Dude, you don't sell out Madison Square Garden based on your YouTube videos if there's not some substance there. This guy never had a TV show. This is a viral talent selling out Madison Square
Garden.
He's
incredibly talented.
When I was a kid, Paul McCartney was one of the only people who could sell out Madison Square Garden. It's amazing. Stevie Wonder had trouble selling out the Garden.
Well, the point is he didn't do it necessarily with thought-provokingness, I don't think.
What he did at the MTV Awards or the VMAs was in itself thought-provoking by poking fun at the overt PC liberal left
safe space mentality. That didn't go over so well with the press.
But for everyone who didn't like that, for the outraged Twitter mob that didn't like it, guarantee it sold him a huge amount of tickets across the country and other places. And it also started a conversation. I don't think he's hateful of people's ability to find safe spaces. I don't think that's who he is. I think he was, you know, poking fun at how overtly we've swung from one side of the spectrum to the other. You know, that's what I think. And I didn't necessarily love all the jokes, but I could see the point behind it. It was still thought-provoking in itself.
Okay, well...
Harry, I feel like we didn't engage you enough.
I think
you seem like a nice
enough.
Person.
Well,
I almost said the wrong thing. You seem like a nice person.
As you know, our podcast... has to include comedic issues of the Comedy Cellar, you know. So, and Harry, of course, is welcome to participate in those. But we do cover a lot of stuff.
I would like Harry to meet Coleman, or my friend Coleman.
Well, I have that written down on my sheet. I have it written down on my sheet.
What?
which we didn't get to, and thoughts on our friend Coleman Yu's article, The Case for Black Optimism. How much is left to overcome? But we're out of time.
Well, yeah, but you know what we should do? You know what? I'm going to send you that article.
Have you read that
I'll
article?
I'll send you the studies.
What's that?
I'll send you the studies.
And you send me the studies. And then maybe have you could come on again if you'd feel welcome to. Talk about the article if you want.
Are you familiar with Coleman Hughes?
I feel like I've heard that
he
name.
He testified before Congress against reparations.
No, not against. See, that's not. He did not. That's how it got. That's what the headline was. But he actually. That was not actually accurate. He opposed certain aspects of reparations and supported other aspects of them. He said that anybody who lived through Jim Crow ought to get reparations. Anybody who was directly impacted by Jim Crow, he feels should get reparations. So just to be accurate. Go ahead. He's that guy, the young guy who spoke up there.
So anyway, feels that...
Is he white or a man of color or is he...
He's black.
He is black. He's half...
Burgess Holmes.
I believe he has some... Latino,
but black.
He's a black-skinned and the descendant of American descendant of slaves on his father's side, on his mother's side. I think he is Hispanic, but I'm not sure.
Yes, but Hispanic black.
Yes. Right. Well, but he might have some native blood in him as well.
All right, Dan. Jesus Christ.
Well,
you're like a Nazi.
Not like a Nazi.
He's an octomaroon.
By the way,
who else divides people up that way? But you see, this is where the movement is going. I'm not trying to be over the top. They are literally going towards dissecting race the way the Nazis did.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's really heading in that direction. It's madness.
It's not enough to be concerned with an end goal of progressive equality. It's now you have to be put into a different subsection. You're only allowed to support that subculture.
Because
that's frustrating.
Because black people were doing that to Coleman.
Fair enough. He's a black guy.
They were trying to figure out what percentage was this.
To figure out whether he was an American descendant of slaves.
No, they're calling his mother. Listen, I mean, nobody did that with Obama.
Is he black enough to have a voice on this issue? That's the
absolutely
question.
Well, everybody should have a voice on every issue. We believe that here anyway, that everyone should have a voice on every issue. For example, Noam is not Asian, you might have noticed. And yet he just came out with a new book, Inadmissible, Why Asian Students Are Being Turned Down at America's Elite Colleges and Universities and Why It's the Most Important Issue of Our Times.
It is an important issue.
Available from Harvard University Press. In 2020.
I'm going to tell you why it's an important issue yet again. It is an important issue because Asians are the number one immigrant group, more than Mexicans, more than Central Americans, Asians. And if we are going to encourage more and more Asians to come to this country, we cannot limit them when they score well on their SATs. That's nuts.
Being punished for achieving and working hard.
Before they're American citizens,
come
to the country. It doesn't matter.
I don't care how hard they work and how high they score. They'll never get as much pussy as Jeff Leach.
Even among Asians. Okay, good night, everybody.